Hello.
Hello, Mr. Scott.
Ah, hello, Mr. Tucker. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How the devil are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
I'm glad we've got over the fee bit and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. I'll just cover that in the disclaimers. So I'm Paul Scott. I'm talking today to Simon Tucker, CEO of Software Radio Technology.
You are.
I am a small shareholder in SRT, and also I'm being paid a small fee for my time for doing this interview. But
on a commercial basis,
but explicit understanding with Simon, I can ask anything I like. So, Simon, do you want to start by briefly this interview with easy questions? We want it to be a proper chat between an investor and a CEO.
Correct.
So, and Simon doesn't know what the questions are in advance.
Yep.
So, Simon, do you want to start by briefly outlining the activities of the company, just for anyone not familiar with that?
Yes. Before that, I just want to add one disclaimer for me. Obviously, I can't release anything that is confidential with our customers and that would make anybody inside that was listening to this.
Good. Yep, fair comment. Thank you.
Okay. So, in general, we develop AIS transponders. AIS transponders are used in a general application that is called maritime domain awareness. And what that means, it's giving people on boats, people on coastlines, and in control rooms with an interest on what's going on the water, situational awareness by being able to track moving entities across the ocean. So our transceivers are fitted to infrastructure, boats. They transmit position and movement information, and that allows everybody to monitor what everybody else is doing. So kind of like air traffic control, but for boats.
Okay, that's a neat way of describing it. Now, moving on to the questioning then, two or three from me, and then the rest of the questions have all come from readers of my blog and from bulletin boards. So the first one's from me. I mean, the number one issue is the lumpiness of orders, isn't it? And,
yep.
I mean, so far there's been an inability to create a growth trend. We've had this sort of alternating of good and bad years. Now, really, could you explain why this has happened and what you're doing to fix it?
Okay, I think the driver for this is a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing about it is that we're in an early stage market for a technology which is being adopted worldwide. I read the blogs just as much as you do, and I know people sort of wax lyrical about, oh my God, you know, where is all this growth market and stuff? And frankly, it's born out of ignorance. I think 5-10 minutes on Google will see that people are, you know, adopting AIS as the technology that they're implementing in their systems, completely separate from us. We simply supply the products. The bad thing about being in that early stage market, which is going into what is a huge market of 26 million boats ultimately, is that it's starting in fits and starts. It doesn't follow a linear pattern. In the early stages where we are now, the adoption, i.e., which matters to us and to our investors, which is somebody buys a transceiver, is driven by a regulation which says you must go and fit one of these things.
Yeah.
There is only one international regulation in place which came out in 2002 when these things were purely for anti-collision of big ships, to where it is now where you have, you know, the EU inland waterways, which was done and is finished. And we supplied £8 million worth of kit. That's now done. There'll be a replacement market, which will start in 5 years' time. Then the EU fisheries, independently of that. So what we haven't seen until, I think, this year is the commencement of where these regulations in multiple jurisdictions start to overlap, and therefore you start to see what our investors want and we want, which is a annual trend, as opposed to, you know, drawing that trend line over several years, which, you know, people listen to politely and see. But then, you know, when a figure's within a certain reporting period don't meet what people want or expect, they get a little upset about that, understandably. So I think hopefully that's explained why that is, that these regulations have not sort of overlapped, although they are now starting to overlap, because it is in the new stage of the market. What are we doing about it? Well, frankly, in the short term, there hasn't been much we could do about it, because we made we made our bed with AIS, and we bet that AIS would be adopted beyond its anti-collision properties, which is what has happened. And so we are tethered to those regulations. Now, for example, the timing of Saudi bringing out its tender or India bringing out its tender on a program that started in 2008 or the U.S. Coast Guard mandate, which started in 2005, is not in our control. You know, I can turn up to Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Coast Guard will talk to me, and they did many times, but it's not going to change their process to implement a national mandate. Aside from that, we have 2 years ago formed a relationship with Exact Earth, and we also bought a company called Geovis, which gets us into the displaying and the management of the data. That starts to open us up now to recurring revenue on each and every one of those transceivers that are now starting to be put in. So the model is evolving. Again, it doesn't happen in 5 minutes because you've got to put these things in, thousands of boats, and then start to sell the data. But as we announced earlier this year, the Middle East, our first full MDM system, what will follow on from that will be maintenance, software upgrades, enhancements, and additional data. And many of our opportunities from our opportunity pipeline are just that. So it will take time to come through, but I think we'll see the overlap of the regulation, which will sort of hide that in the shorter term. But in the longer term, it'll be those data sales. That'll be very interesting.
Okay. Actually, that was one of our first reader questions. It was from Cholison Andrew on Stockopedia, who he asked about future recurring revenues and Geovis. He said, could you give any estimate of the likely amounts of future recurring revenues?
I'm not going to give any estimates beyond that's already out in the market from our broker. As you well know, that's not allowed, I think. I can give some rough indication. For example, if you take ABSI, which is our technology that allows transmissions from our transceivers to be seen from space, and the reason that's important in the marine world is that radio communications has a line of sight range, and of course most of the water is out of sight of the coastline. Typically, you're looking at about $10 per boat per month is the value of that data. So, certainly all 26 million boats around the world are not going to be fitted, but there are 8 million commercial boats, of which 4 million are fishing boats. And, you know, even in our opportunity pipeline, a small fraction of those are fitted. You know, $10 times a million boats is adds up to quite a lot. Is new, and people are very focused at the moment on implementing coast systems and actually getting these things onto boats, and then they will start to fill in the gaps with the satellite data.
Okay. Someone called with a call sign Handy says, he's asked about 5 questions, but just to narrow it down a little bit, he said, is the company underestimating the competition? I'm aware of WeatherDoc, Altec, Drew Marine, Acratex, Ocean Signal, and then various other names, Digital Yacht, Orolia. So I know in the past, I think you said that you didn't face a great deal of competition, but is that still the case?
Well, there's competition in the market. Some of those names, so Drew Marine isn't competition. They buy their products from ACR, buy them from us. Orolia don't have their own products. They buy them from Altec. So Altec and WeatherDoc really are the only ones there that are actually producing their own AIS transceivers. We see them in the market. But when I talk about are we concerned about competition, we're paranoid about competition, which is why we continue to invest 50% of our overhead in R&D and are consistently ahead in bringing new products to market, but also the performance of our products are well ahead of those people in the market. And the result of that is those guys don't really have, and those guys I mean WeatherDoc and Altec, have any traction in the market. Sure, they pick up bits and pieces here and there, but they just don't have any traction. But we are and have always been paranoid about competition, and that's why we push so hard. And you know, how do we defend against that? I think that that blogger, if he called some people in the industry, would very quickly find out that, you know, everybody trusts SRT. Why? Because the products perform better, they're better quality, and therefore we're trusted. I've just come back from the Middle East, and you know, they're buying SRT because they know it works. So, and then on top of that, we then have unique aspects within what is an open standard. I mean, the weakness with AIS is it's an open standard. So anybody can do it in theory, but we have things like ABSI. So today, if you sell a low-cost AIS transceiver without ABSI, you can't track it by satellite. Excuse me. And that is a key element for extended range tracking. With GeoVis, we have dynamic 3D display. Some people in Europe think that's a bit of a gimmick, but I can tell you the rest of the world thinks it's the next generation of maritime displays. And, you know, within 2 years of buying that product and making it into a real product as opposed to just a sort of nice display, we have ports in Malaysia using it, and we now have a country using it as its display and control system. So I think that's, you know, it's not just me wittering on. It's real.
Okay. We've got a couple of sort of questions of a similar theme, which are concerning your how much reliance you have on external companies. One is a supplier, I believe, a Hungarian subsidiary of a large U.S. company that you get your transceivers from,
Flextronics.
I believe. And and the other one was the satellite partner. Is it Comdev? Who apparently are being taken over or something. So could you perhaps comment on those two issues and whether they affect you?
Well, Paul, you're in the media, so you know the drama that is often created that doesn't exist. dare I say that? So on the first thing, we have, as an electronics company, it's quite normal for us for electronics companies to have a contract manufacturer. Apple does exactly the same, and it contracts out the manufacturer of all its Apple phones to Foxtron in China.
Yes.
We do exactly the same. Except we use Flextronics, and we've had a long-standing relationship with Flextronics, who know our products well. It is the world's second-largest electronics manufacturer. They have 80 factories around the world. We own our production test equipment in Flextronics. All the designs are ours. I think the question there is, you know, what happens if the factory burnt down? It's very easily transferable to another factory. Sure, it's a pain, but within a couple of months, we're up and going. We've also got product that's sitting here in stock, so it would be very unlikely that it would even slow down any sort of fulfillment of orders, etc. So we're very happy that we're with a big, stable, professional outfit that produce very high, consistent quality of product. So we're very happy with that. And actually, people often say, well, you need to dual source. When you dual source, in electronics, it is a nightmare because then you have dual quality standards. You've got to manage two different factories, two different supply chains. You have minimum order quantities of components. So a particular transceiver might just need two of one particular type of component, but the minimum order quantity is 10,000 from Texas Instruments. Mm. But if you have two suppliers, you've now got to buy 20,000 of these things.
Yeah,
on Comdev, so Comdev is the owner of Exact Earth. And Exact Earth are the people that we selected to do our extended range ABSI tracking technology with. We have a rock solid legal agreement with them and partnership. We jointly own ABSI. I think perhaps some of the, and I don't have any information about this, but you know, satellite is quite an area of interest for a lot of companies, and perhaps there are some rumors flying around. But I think Comdev is quite keen to stay as it is. Would it affect us? No, not in any way, shape, or form. You know, we have a right to 30% of all the revenues that they derive from Class B sales, and we have a right to buy data from them at a fixed price, which we can bundle and sell with our MDM system. All the data that they're receiving comes from our transceivers. So I would say actually, you know, they need us more than the other way around. But this is a true partnership, and I'm really comfortable with it.
Right. Okay. Brilliant. Now we've got a guy on ADVFN, the sort of wild west of the bulletin board world, who asks. He's called the Prophet. He's asked a number of questions, but in particular, he's asking for the status of the Saudi deal, which I think you said was going to be indicative value of $5 million imminent. And also, did the South Korea mandate happen, he asks.
Okay. So with Saudi, and this is probably a good time to talk about our sales opportunity pipeline.
Yeah.
We the total value of the Saudi opportunity is significantly more than that. Where the $5 million came from is the percentage of that that we thought might come in and may come in this financial year. The big trick, the tricky bit with us is trying to determine which, you know, which reporting period it's going to come in. And I think I've been consistently trying to say that to investors. So in Saudi, they have tens of thousands of boats, and they have a program over 3 years to monitor them all. In parallel with that, they're also installing coastal network, display systems, etc. The first tender that comes out for a specified product that we have been trialing with them and working with them for some time is expected this side of Christmas for delivery in the last quarter of this year. It hasn't come out yet. It's Saudi Arabia. They're very busy in Yemen and places like that. It's not an excuse. It's a reality. But we are expecting that imminently.
And it's a March year end you have, isn't it?
Correct, so, it is, yes.
You've got a little bit of wiggle room on that one, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, we have with our supply chain, again, we sort of get criticized sometimes for having too much stock. You know, it's a balance of having finished stock and components. If you don't have anything, components or anything in the supply chain, it takes you 6 months to make that product from a standing start.
Oh, okay.
You know, there is no short circuit. When you go to Texas Instruments and ask for 10,000 processors, they say, thank you for the order. We'll ship them in 6 months.
Yes.
That's what happened. This just-in-time business only works for Toyota. We're not Toyota. So we don't even get tea and biscuits at Texas Instruments. So, but, you know, they're a very good company. They make very good products. We're very happy with them. So we have a combination. We hold some finished stock, and we hold strategic components, long lead-time components, which enables us to ship very quickly, particularly in the Middle East. Once they take a long time to make decision. Once they make the decision, they want it, you know, tomorrow.
Yes,
but you need to be in a position to deliver that. So, you know, our information with Saudi is it's progressing through their, you know, their government approval process, and it's at the final stages, and we're expecting to see that tender come out.
Okay, and South Korea.
South Korea, the mandate is, it was originally scheduled to come in September. It's now scheduled to come in December, and approximately 3,000 boats will have 3 months, according to the copies of the tender that we've seen, to fit.
Okay.
But with all these things, you don't know until it comes out.
Yes.
You know, this is a caveat on it all. This is a government. I mean, it's a bit like, well, tell me when we're going to start building the third runway at Heathrow. You know, well, good luck with that bit.
Okay. The prophet also asked another question. With a name like that, you shouldn't need to ask any questions.
No, this is the actually, absolutely. I should just keep quiet and answer in my head. There we are. That should be enough.
He says,
that would be even scarier.
He says, with regard to the US mandate, which is now in force, deadline March 1st, 2016, he said, could you give any further guidance on that? There's numbers he's seen vary from 5,000 vessels to 20,000 vessels.
Yeah, nobody knows the real figure, is the reality. I think people always think that everybody knows exactly how many boats there are, and one would hope there is. They do, but they don't. So,
yeah.
And how many are fitted and how many haven't got them, etc. I mean, the US has an incomplete AIS monitoring network, so it doesn't know itself. The regulation came in at the beginning of this calendar year, and you don't have to fit one until March. I was recently in the States because we've engaged a salesperson, not just for that mandate, but because, you know, it's the largest economy in the world, probably shortly to be overtaken by China, if not already. But it's, you know, huge ports and waterways and Aton for all our other stuff as well to progress that. And when I was there last week, I was told no uncertain terms by a company called Port Supply and West Marine, who sells 80% of marine electronics in the United States, so knows a thing or two. And they said all these people, all these commercial people that now need to fit one, hadn't chosen to buy one until now.
Mm.
They're not going to buy one until they have to buy one. And, of course, our argument is, well, you know, they should buy one now, get ahead of the game. They should, you know, what about if there isn't stock? In America, it's a land of abundance. The buyer does not think that. It hadn't even occurred to me. They believe, much like when you go to buy your mobile phone, you can rock up to Vodafone, and the iPhone will be there, right? You can't imagine ordering it and being told you'll wait 6 months.
No, that's right.
Well, it's exactly the same for the tugboat owner in Detroit. He thinks that in February he'll just go and buy one because that's when he needs to buy one. So he's not going to go and spend $2,000 until then.
Yeah.
So sadly, I think we're going to see quite a scrabble January, February time. We've seen a few orders, increased orders from our normal customers who you really don't know where it goes. I mean, we might sell a Class A to Koden in Japan, who then sends it unbeknown to us to their U.S. North American distributor, who unbeknown to us sells it to that Detroit tugboat owner because he chose to buy one.
You wouldn't
know. But I think we're going to see it right at the end. And we have tried. We've experimented in three different areas where we've gone and spent 2 weeks intensively talking to the company and tugboat owners and stuff. Yes, we know which one we're going to buy and we know who we're going to get it from, but we'll get it when we need it. And we don't need it until the regulation comes into force, which is the 1st of March. And at that point, they have to have it. The good thing in the United States is that if you're not compliant with the regulations, you're not insured. And that's the enforcement mechanism. Contrast that to the EU fisheries, where the enforcement of the EU law for fitting AIS above 15 meters is left to the local marine police in the port. And, of course, as you go further south in Europe, they're slightly less fastidious about that. Not wishing to upset anyone. So the U.S. Coast Guard, I know people, I read some people, oh, well, where's that gone and what have you? I mean, that I'd urge them to call me and talk to me about it. The reality is there's a window where people will buy these things. And in the U.S., it's all going to be in the last couple of months. And there's nothing we can do about that. We've got stock. We're ready to go. We've got all the sales channels. Everybody knows that ours is the best in the market, the reliable one, because if you're buying something as a commercial entity that you can't operate without, it becomes mission critical. You want something that's proven. And the best-selling Class A by a mile for the last 5 years has been our Poseidon Class A.
Okay. Looking at funding for the company, I noticed that the number of shares has increased from, I think, just under 98 million to 125 million over the last 5 years, which actually for a small AIM company is quite a modest increase in shares. So there hasn't been a great deal of dilution. The company's been largely self-funding, I think, with a few smallish placings along the way. Will you need to do any more placings? And if so, would you be including an open offer for existing shareholders?
No and yes.
Right, so you don't envisage more placings, but if you do, you would do an open offer?
Absolutely. Frankly, just talking openly, and my... I'll probably get in trouble here, my broker and stuff. But, I've pushed on each occasion to do that, which is why I try to engage with private investors. And in fact, we have some private investors who have emailed me and said, if that situation arises, contact me. And equally, as you know, Paul, that needs to be done in a controlled way. And the broker says, if you tell, Bill that you're gonna be raising some money and would he like to subscribe, he might tell his wife, who tells somebody else and all of a sudden it's out. But to me, that's not a reason. Well, to me, that's not a reason not to include everybody, because I think, we don't have different classes of share. We have one class of share, so everybody's equal, whether you're the biggest institution or a chap with 10 shares. So absolutely, it would be open. But I think everybody's forgetting about our deal in the Middle East that's recently happened. The rest of the core business and everything else. I don't foresee us needing to raise anything.
Okay, and I think even people who are critical of you, because there are some fairly jaundiced shareholders on some of these bulletin boards.
Yeah, understandably, it's taken a while. I agree.
Even the ones who are critical accept that you've been very open with shareholders, doing webinars and open days at the factory and so on, which I think is excellent stuff. But do you accept that you've been too optimistic in the forecasting and towards investors in the past?
That's a rhetorical question. How could I not? I missed the target. I did. I learned from my mistake, which is that, you know, at the time when I put those forecasts out, they were based on information that came back from the market on timing. They were based, for example, you know, representations from the U.S. on timing of their mandate, which would have been completed 3 years ago, for example. Now, I'm not blaming everybody else, but how do you judge that? You know, 50%, 30%, 80%. But I got it wrong. So what we've done now is dumbed everything down, and we will upgrade as those opportunities fall in. And I think we need to go through a bit of a no man's land at the moment where, you know, some people trust us, some people don't, and we need to rebuild that trust. And that doesn't take 5 minutes. So I accept that criticism. Equally, I think you have to be in this business optimistic. You know, we would never have bought GeoVis if we weren't optimistic about the effect that Dynamic 3D would have 2 years on. And it's taken 2 years to bring that to market. We had to be optimistic in 2006 when, at a time when nobody thought AIS would go beyond super tankers and anti-collision, to now being rolled out in India on the smallest fishing boats, or in Bahrain or Qatar or Oman or the EU fisheries or the inland waterways or Thailand or Australia, you know. So you have to be optimistic, and along the way, unfortunately, what seems like 5 minutes when you're sitting in the company can seem like years when you're outside of the company. I mean, you know, I'm also on the other end when I'm investing in AIM companies, and I think, God, this lot just, are they just drinking coffee all day? You know, go and get the sales and stuff. So I do accept I have been over optimistic, but I've, you know, we've recalibrated that, and we'll rebuild that trust. But again, I do urge people, come and see it. You know, an awful lot of people pontificate with their own ideas as to what might be the case. Come and challenge me and the team, not just me. Come and meet anybody, any of the 44 people that are working here, and talk to them at any time and see for themselves.
Brilliant. Oh, well, that sounds excellent. Okay, we've probably used up the lot of time, Simon. So any sort of closing remarks you want to make?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about just very briefly about our opportunity pipeline, just to establish that. Because people often sort of cast aspirations on that. You know, it's £200 billion figure. Simon's throwing darts at the wall. If we take Saudi as a good example, we include part of that in that opportunity pipeline on the basis that it will start its rollout during that period of time. So not all of that revenue figure will come in within a three-year period. I reckon maybe 50% of that will come in within that three-year period. But it's the important point for everybody to look at is, when do these projects commence? And then, as we sort of reveal who then comes into that pot new, when might they start? Because these projects, I mean, if you take the one we recently signed in the Middle East, whilst we'll deliver all the equipment very quickly in this particular instance, it will take about 18 months to install it. It's a big task, and that's a small country. It's a huge logistical task to go and install these things on these boats, install coast stations and things. So, you know, we've assumed that in some of these projects, maybe Thailand, for example, it'll spread over 4 years, so therefore some of that amount will fall within that three year period. But they're not pie in the sky. All of those projects in the opportunity pipeline, there is legislation which specifically says AIS, and there are budgets allocated, and they're in the planning phase.
Okay.
If they don't meet those criteria, then they're still, you know, in this sort of global opportunity thing that we're working on.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed, you know, the numbers come in pretty well. I mean, the last trading update, you were fairly firm on your H2 order book, which you were going to fulfill by the 31st of March.
Well, it's an order book.
It's
an order book with order times. I mean, it's not a sort of, well, it might not. They're firm, committed orders. That's the end of it. We've got core business on top of that. We've got additional contracts from these tenders that we expect as well. So, you know, like I said earlier on, we've recalibrated expectations, and we will upgrade as necessary when that comes in.
Okay, brilliant. That's probably a good note to end on, Simon, because I've got to type all this up, so I don't want the time
for
to go on too long. Yeah, it takes a hell of a long time.
I bet it does.
So, okay, well, thanks for your time, Simon. That's really interesting, and maybe we can have a catch-up after the year-end, perhaps, in the spring.
Absolutely, if not before. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Simon. Cheers.
Thanks for your time. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.